What's up, y'all?
All right. So listen, we have a new opportunity so you can be loyal increasingly to the Corner Store Podcast. We have a Patreon account. Tarma, Davian, where can people find us on Patreon?
Patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
And this is a way where you can support us each and every week. There are, you know, very affordable ways to support the Corner Store. It gives you a multitude of options. You could support the snacks, stop Max from coming out of his pocket every week to, you know, feed people in the Corner Store. And you could also be a part of a live studio broadcast if you wish. There's a lot of things in that Patreon account. Tar, where can people find that one more time?
Patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
Y'all, please consider becoming a Patreon, a patron of the Corner Store. Thank you for your support. Hey, y'all. Welcome to another edition of the Corner Store. I am your co-host, Kevin Koval, flying solo again without the homie Tara Mahadevan. Tara, we miss you. Come back all the time, every day. But I'm really happy that you are here, and I'm super excited to introduce our guest. I did want to say that I really appreciate all the hits and the shares we're getting on socials. And, you know, when you listen to an episode that you like, please, please tell people that you think will like it in addition. It helps us. It helps us out. Also, if you have suggestions about who you want to hear in the Corner Store, please hit us up. DMs are open. And, you know, one of the things we're really trying to do is help creatives in the city and beyond promote new projects, new ideas, things that they have, things that they're working on, things that are coming out. And we're also very interested in kind of mapping the historic landscape of how we got to this moment in Chicago culture. And so, you know, I get really beautiful DMs from some of the old heads and OGs and folks my age and even older who I want to start getting on the show more. But let us know who you want to hear from. And we'll, you know, myself and Max and Tara and DJ Cashera, we'll get those folks booked. Today in the Corner Store, we have an artist who just came off a very powerful week, a multi-hyphenate, the current National Youth Poet Laureate of the United States of America, a singer, a songwriter, a poet, a brand new author who also has a new EP in the world. There's a lot to get into with this young artist because, you know, Kara Jackson does a lot. And Kara, it's great and an honor to have you in the Corner Store.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to hop in. But before we do, I did secure some snacks for you. I know that you have various dietary restrictions, as do I. So I was trying to channel, you know, the shit that I would want. Some unsweetened organic apple juice.
Okay, true.
I hope maybe you like that. And then these are quite delicious. I think my downfall as someone who tries to follow a healthy lifestyle and tries to take in good shit from a body of snacks. I love snacking, so I think you have to, you know, understand the snack game. You know what I mean? So also secured you some Fresh Pick Goodness Harvest Snaps Green Pea Snack Crisps, the original salted.
These are crack.
Right? Those are good, right? I know.
These are so good.
You've had those before?
Yeah.
They're bomb, right?
The kids that I babysit, like Oak Park households always keep the pea crisps
on deck
in the pantry.
So is that also one of your gigs? You are also a sitter of babies?
Not so much anymore. I don't know. I feel like I used to babysit a lot, and now all the families don't hit me up. I guess they kind of assume that I'm like done and above that, but I would appreciate some babysitting money every now and then.
Yeah. Was that a good gig for you?
Yeah. Oak Park parents pay so well.
Well, like, shout out to them. How long was your babysitting career, really?
Pretty much like all of high school. There were a lot of like maybe my sophomore year or my junior year, like a lot of new families started moving in to my block, and so there are lots of babies and like toddlers and stuff who needed to be taken care of. So it was just really nice because I was like, I'm old. I can watch your kids. But now they're kind of getting older and maybe they don't need babysitters.
Do you still see those same kids that you helped rear?
Yeah. At like block parties and stuff. We had a block party like a couple weeks ago, and I was kind of pressed because one of the kids that I babysit usually, like, there was another girl who lives on my block who was babysitting her at the block party. And I was like, that low-key could have been my gig. Like, but it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not that anyone has passed any job, but I think you've taken on quite a lot for yourself. But before we get to, and I mean, hopefully we're going to get to hear a poem or two from the new book. We'll talk about that. The new book is called, of course, Bloodstone Cowboy. It just came out on Haymarket Books. You also have a new EP that is in the world, A Song for Every Chamber of My Heart. Mm-hmm. That is available via, where can people find the EP?
It's on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, Apple Music, Spotify.
Hey.
It might not be on, I don't know, one of my cousins was like, it's not on Amazon or whatever. And I was like, people use Amazon to listen to music?
I think my stepdad does.
Yeah. I was like, y'all would be okay.
Yeah, you'll find it. Before we get into talking about those projects, you're from Oak Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Oak Park, for those that don't know, what can you tell us about Oak Park and what it was like coming up as a young person?
Oh, man. Oak Park is, so it's a suburb, but I think it's like many suburbs, but it's also kind of unlike many suburbs in terms of, like, the history of it, because it's one of the only places in the United States that was, like, intentionally integrated. And so there's kind of a weird, like, racial history in Oak Park, and it's always, like, advertised as being like super diverse, but it's also like super racist. But it's true, like I grew up on a block with like mostly white kids. I've been like hanging out with white kids since I was like a baby, and that totally has influenced and like informed my work now, and just like my whole life, because I've been dealing with white people and like engaging with whiteness for my entire life, and so that totally creates like a very individual experience that I feel like comes out in a lot of my work. But it's also like there's a lot of privilege being in a suburb. Like there are things that I haven't had to worry about that like some of my friends who live in Chicago definitely worry about. Or just like, I don't know, there's like slang that we use that like people in Chicago.
There's Oak Park slang?
Yeah.
What's some of it? Can you hip us to the latest?
Well, one of my friends was trying to throw this like party during the day, and they're from Chicago. This is Pat, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I can come to your darty because I'm like doing something, and they were like, what is a darty? And I was like, it's a day party. Like that's a word that people use.
That's new on me. I mean, listen, I mean, things escape me, but I feel like I
don't know. There's
one.
Just things like that will happen. Or a lot of like, I don't know. We kind of talk like weird like skater. I feel like I sound like a skater boy like a lot. Like I'll just be like, what's up bro, like oh my god bro, like that's so like, or I don't know, people just talk like that, like we all talk like that. And I think I notice it when I'm in situations where I'm around people who don't talk like that, and I'm always like, what's up bro, like we like all do that. So that's also just kind of like a weird thing about Oak Park, is that like sometimes we'll like try to like emulate Chicago slang. Like people say like popped, like a lot of people would be like, oh that's, or like I don't, or like bopped. We like have words that like are supposed to be mean certain things in Chicago and probably do, and we just mess it up and like heard it wrong, so they mean different things and it doesn't make sense. And I always just think it's so funny because people in Oak Park will be like in their like Instagram bios or whatever be like, I'm from Chicago, like whatever, like that happens like all the time. But I'm like, y'all don't know what any of these words mean. Like,
which speaks to, in some ways, like the intense segregation that the city maintains. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, Oak Park is, I mean, it borders Chicago.
Yeah.
And there are people who are on the Chicago side who migrate to Oak Park, who mm-hmm. go to the schools in Oak Park.
Yeah.
And so that's, I mean, yeah, that's kind of wild. Even linguistically, how that segregation really is maintained. Of course, growing up in Oak Park, when did you begin to find this penchant for the creative space?
Well, I think I've always, like with my music, I've always been kind of like searching for some type of like way to express myself. And I think Oak Park actually is like a pretty cool place to be making music because there's just a lot of resources there. Like, I mean, the high school, like Oak Park River Forest, just has like a lot of stuff going on, and just like the band there, and also like my older brother who's like here right now.
Shout out. Yeah.
He did band, so I always was like going to like band concerts and stuff, and like, so that was kind of the first time where I was like, I need to be doing something. I like need an outlet.
Were you already singing at that point, or playing any instrument? Or?
Yeah, I really started singing. I feel like I've been singing my whole life. I don't think people started noticing that I was like decent at it until I was like, well, I don't know. We had this block party. I want to say I was like 8 or 9, but maybe that's just not true. But we had this block party, and there was like this live band playing at it. And they had like this like open mic or whatever, and I did this Ella Fitzgerald song. And I think that was like the first time where people were like, oh, this person can like actually sing. Because there's this boy on my block who is like known for singing, and he was in like the Chicago Children's Choir, and like he's really good. He did a really good rendition of Tomorrow from Annie, and like people would always like make him do it because he was like this little boy and he could sing really high. And so I always felt like, okay, well, I just like can't top that. So like nobody really paid attention to me. But one of my friends who I would play like with I would play with Barbies with her, and we'd always like have our Barbie singing and stuff together. Like we'd have these like whole like scenarios. And so she was like, you should go sing on the open mic. And I was like, okay. And then I did it. And so everybody in the block was like, what? My mom was like, what? I didn't really like understand that you were like actually decent at this. Especially because like Forrest, like my older brother, was like always singing. He's like always been like the louder one out of the two of us, so like he was always singing like something in the house, and I could also sing. I was also capable of it, but I just kind of like would be quiet about it.
Yeah, which is your kind of MO in some ways.
Yeah, right? I think so.
What was the music in the house when you were coming up as a kid?
There's a lot. I think my music taste now is just very eclectic, but I think it always has been in a lot of ways because I was definitely raised on jazz. Like I've been listening to jazz for my entire life, like definitely. But since I was an infant, because when I was a baby, I would not sleep. So my mom would just like play jazz to like get me to go to sleep. Uh-huh. But also just like soul, like my mom definitely is just like kind of only listening to soul and will be forever. So like Marvin Gaye and like Aretha Franklin, The Temptations, like all of that. But also I think like my brother was really crucial in a lot of my like education of music because he brought in like a lot of hip hop stuff, and my dad too, like older hip hop, like, and also just,
yeah,
like,
no, your dad's ahead. Yeah, your dad not sure.
Also,
about
my dad listens to like Rick Ross a lot, which is really concerning.
No, but listen, your dad stays very relevant. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's a hip
to
young man.
Extent. And then also like folk music, like I definitely just we listened to a lot of like Jim Croce growing up, and just like stuff like that. And we were in. I took piano lessons from the time when I was like 5. I think I started playing piano when I was 5 and like quit when I was in high school. But also just classical music because we were playing so many classical songs for piano. So I just like was also kind of just like obsessed with just like Erik Satie and like just Beethoven and like literally just like classical music. So there's just like a lot going on. Like there's just a lot. I think the only unexplained aspect of like my music taste now in a lot of ways is like rock music. Like my mom the other day was like, I really just don't understand how you got into rock music. Like that was not me. It was not me who did it. But I think my dad also, like, we definitely listened to the Beatles growing up a lot too, so it all is explained somehow.
Well, it's interesting because the music that you make and the music on this project, A Song for Every Chamber of My Heart, how would you classify it?
I'm not sure. That's a good question, because when I was putting it into like beat and like to TuneCore, and I had to choose a genre, I was like, I don't know. So I put it, like, on Apple Music, it's under singer-songwriter because I think that's honestly, like, the big, like the easiest cop-out. Like, yeah, to just be like,
look, the broadest.
Yeah, because I also just think that it's very hard for me to classify. Like, I don't know. I guess it's not that hard for me in my head. But then I'm also concerned about people just, like, lumping me into some type of category and, like, not allowing me to, like, get out of it. Like, I see that so much with so many artists. Especially black artists who sing, because it's like people just really want you to be an R&B singer. Yeah. Like, people just are always like, oh, are you R&B? Like, I talk a lot with Tasha about that, because, like, Tasha definitely has been dealing with that a lot. Just, like, people being like, this R&B singer. And she's like, I'm not. I'm just black. Like, I'm a black person who sings.
Well, because, both of you in some ways, and you even maybe more so. I mean, it seems like you are consciously participating in a tradition of American folk music. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, of course, American folk music, I mean, hip hop is an American folk music. Right. Blues, of course, is an American folk music. And
folk, just folk music is black music.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It comes from, like, the origins of folk music really start in, like, prisons and, like, the songs that black men were singing in prisons.
Right.
And so I've never felt like, I don't know, I think it's a weird thing also considering just, like, how I want my work to be perceived and, like, the people I'm talking to in my work. Are black people, the people in my work that I'm dealing with when I'm singing, like, I'm not really thinking about whiteness in my work. And so it's interesting to be, like, in a genre that is so white, but knowing the history of my genre, I've never felt, like, intimidated by, like, with these white men or whatever, because I'm just like, Bob Dylan and, like, all those people needed black men to make their music, like, they just did. And, like, black women too, especially, just, like, thinking about, like, Big Mama Thornton and just, like, Odetta and, like, all these people who are folk singers and, like, yeah, the pioneers of it, or even Joan Baez, who is a woman of color and totally is responsible for Bob Dylan's entire career. So, like, having those women be kind of like the blueprint for my own career, I've never felt intimidated by people like that, because I'm just like, there's always gonna be some, like, Bob Dylan type person trying to, like, take credit for all this stuff. And it's like, and I do like Bob Dylan, I think he's a great lyricist, whatever, but I've never felt fazed by it, because I'm just like, this is black music, this is black American music, and I know that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, of course, this is a wondering about history, but, you know, I wonder how much Woody Guthrie, who was, you know, one of Bob mm-hmm. Dylan's biggest influences, I feel like he was, and I might be wrong, but I feel like he was pretty attuned to that connection and, mm-hmm. and that origination
yeah.
of that folk music was and is black cultural production. Yeah. And then he was participating as a white working person who was utilizing, you know, a similar form.
Yeah.
And so I often wonder about, you know, when will that book about American folk music be written that recontextualizes its origin right. story and paints it in a different way and puts a lot of these people together that you just mentioned, mm-hmm. you know. It's interesting you said that when you're making music, you aren't thinking about whiteness, in part because there is a good amount of your poetry that is a wrestling with, considering, critiquing whiteness, and some of it is written, you know, without whiteness in mind, I would say, altogether. And I want to get to the poetry, but I want to maybe hear a song off of the record, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And then maybe we could talk a little about the song itself. What song are we going to hear?
We're going to hear Crush, which I think out of all the songs, I guess technically Ray is the only song that I bring up race, like, directly, but I think Crush also is, like, probably, like, the cutest song on the EP, but also evokes the most emotion for people for some reason, because I guess it's just, like, a feeling that people have. Because I wrote it because I was like, oh, I like this person, but I really think that liking people is, like, inconvenient, and I, like, don't want to do it. So I was thinking about that, but also just, like, thinking about whiteness, like, the person I was writing about was not white. And so it's just, like, thinking about my own experience in that song, like, it is just kind of, like, about my own experience within myself. And because most of my songs are about myself, also, I'm just not white, so.
Listen, big facts. DJ Cashair, if we can, let's hear Crush from Kara Jackson's A Song for Every Chamber in My Heart.
I have a crush. It's not like me. love's just a pain in the ass. And I know that love's gonna cost me some hair, but I haven't got there. I have a crush, and it's hush, hush. I have an ache, and I hope it's mistaken. I have a laugh. Me as your fool. I have a crush keeping me awake. I have a like, and I know that's not like me. I know that love's just a pain in the ass. And I know that love's gonna cost me some hair, but I haven't got there. I have a crush. And it's hush, hush.
Hey, that was Crush off of Kara Jackson's brand new EP, A Song for Every Chamber of the Heart. That is beautiful.
Thank you.
And it's cute, but it's also, the ache in there, you mentioned the ache, mm-hmm. but the ache is also present in your voice because... I guess it's hard to have a crush. It's hard to feel that way about somebody, right?
Yeah. I'm a Libra also, so I feel like I feel that way a lot. So it's kind of like I'm just annoying.
How many songs on the project?
There are 4 songs, which kind of just is what the title is about also. Because there are 4 chambers in the heart.
Right, you got to know some biology for that.
Which I just don't know that much biology.
Okay, but you know enough. And again, where can people find the record?
Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud, Bandcamp. I also have CDs of it if you know me and want one.
Yeah. Well, and those are limited and really beautiful. Yes. The cover art is beautiful.
I made them with my mom, so.
That's adorable. Shout out to your parents, by the way. Just yeah. Incredible, incredible people. All right. So the EP came out. Just this past week, and in addition, you also put out your first, collection of poems. Bloodstone Cowboy came out on Haymarket Books. Tell us a little about this beautiful, important project, which really is a contribution to this moment in American letters, and really just points to the profundity of your future in this work. But. You know, what is this collection about for you?
This collection is about my lineage and dealing with my lineage and the ways in which I honor it, but also the ways I deviate from my lineage. And I think thinking about my family tree and trying to extract the outcasts from it, or just the rebels from my family tree, and also establish myself as one of those people while also pining for the sense of belonging, pining for the kind of, I guess, uniformity that kind of feels like it's present in my family tree. I think I come from a lot of women who are very traditional. I come from women who are also not traditional at all, and I think that's kind of what some of the book is dealing with. And then also thinking about, so my dad is from the South, so thinking about like my bloodline in that way, and thinking about how I'm a consequence of just like a lot of country culture, but also thinking about like my life in the suburbs and being in the north and like how those multitudes kind of just exist and how I have to deal with them every day. And yeah.
That's one of the things I appreciate about you as a person and appreciate about your work in particular is that in a body of work that is, you know, a chapbook or an EP, you are able to express a spectrum of who you are that no one could really pin down. You know, you are, I mean, like all of us, you know, truly unique, but I think you do a lot of work in a short amount of space to express some of that multiplicity. Some of my favorite poems in this book are the accounting for this Southern lineage, mm-hmm. which is also, of course, a very Chicago, Chicago tradition because of the Great Migration and how many Black folks came north seeking work and the promise of a so-called better future. Right. And your family is a part of that narrative, and you account then for, you know, some of the women and your grandfather and others who you are remembering there.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. So you mind reading something from the book to give people a little taste about what the book's about? Because it's not just about this heritage. It is also then the book is also about you wrestling with being quiet and an introvert and a young person, like a teenager. Which is great because I love when artists are very reflective of the time they are in the moment. They are really documenting the moment. And this book, you know, to me is perfect for the young woman, the young person who is wrestling with the ways to move closer towards their identity in a time of maturation from childhood to young adulthood that's very difficult, and you're, you know, providing this really interesting blueprint for that.
Yeah. I think thinking about what you were just talking about, I'm going to read a poem from the chapbook that's like more concerned with myself and my teenagehood, called Happier Elsewhere, after Denise Duhamel. My virginity is somewhere eating a greasy burger with extra mustard. When I told my mother, she held me real tight and told me about a bad man who used to kiss her before my father did. We put up signs for my virginity, waited for it to come home like a cat. I walked around shaking a can of its favorite food. Have you seen it? Have you seen it? I smelled the coats of men hoping my sex rose from their pockets. When they asked me what it looked like, I could only say, far away. It's easy to think of my virginity dancing the cowboy cha-cha. It's easy to think it's happier elsewhere, shaking its hips into a faraway wind.
Yeah, that is from Kara Jackson's brand new brilliant chapbook, Bloodstone Cowboy, that is available on Haymarket Books. You're good at a lot of things.
I guess so.
Yeah. But is that difficult to, I mean, you essentially were kind of creating these projects. I know the book was a long time in the making. Mm-hmm. But these, how do you switch the differentiation when you're creating? How do you go into I'm singer-songwriter mode, I'm writing poems, or is it the same mind?
I think, I don't know. I'm still trying to navigate through that, honestly, because sometimes I think right now the minds are kind of separate in a way, and they're definitely starting to meld together in a lot of ways. The songs on the EP were definitely like from a way more separate mind than the chapbook. But I think also that comes from just the fact that a lot of the songs on the EP are actually kind of old at this point. Like Ray, I wrote when I was 17. Don't also probably like around that time. Like, so I think right now I'm really trying to think about like how I can be intentional about songwriting in a different way. But I think also it just kind of depends on the mood that I'm in. Like, I think when I just get tired sometimes of, like, one or the other. Like, when I was writing my chapbook, I was so tired of poems that I couldn't write anything but songs, because if I wrote another poem, I was going to set myself on fire. So that kind of just is what happened. And I think also songs, I just became really prolific out of nowhere. Like, it used to be very hard for me to write songs. Like, when I wrote Ray, I was like, yes, I have one song that's, like, decent. And then all of a sudden, like, I think this year I just would be up at, like, 4 a.m. and I was like, I cannot go to sleep. And so I finished the song, or just, like, I would get into my bed and, like, I would just have an idea for a song and I'd have to get out of my bed again. So I think it just kind of became, like, a matter of, like, music consuming me again. I think I went through a long period. Once I started becoming known for my poetry, I also just kind of, like, put my music on the back burner, even though it was what I loved first. And I think I'm just allowing myself to, like, love music again in a way that's, like, the most authentic for me. And so I think right now I'm kind of just putting a lot of work into my songwriting. And that process just looks different, because I also think, like, writing poems for some reason is, like, a lot more jarring, because the criteria is so focused on, like, the language and what it means and, like, how it's original. And sometimes songs are just easier because you can get away with being more cliche, and that's fine. I kind of like that aspect of it. Like, there are a lot of my favorite lines are, like, from love songs or just stuff like that that I was kind of taught to not really like
doing. I mean, poems, at least.
Yeah, like, love poems, everybody's like, oh, here we go. Like, I feel like a lot of people are just like, oh, like, if you use love in a poem, like, it's so cliche or whatever. But then, like, a song like Crush is, like, after, like, releasing the EP, like, most of my feedback from it has just been like, oh my god, like, that Crush song is, like, that's it, like, that's my favorite song. And it's just so funny to me, because I presented that in a chapbook. Like, if I wrote Crush down in a chapbook and was like, this is my poem, y'all, Haymarket Books, like, shout out, like, people would be like, what? This cannot happen. But
I think you're getting at some of the distinctions between songwriting and poetry writing, and obviously there's a great overlap, and mm-hmm. there are a lot of instances, and your lyrics included, where you could read some of them and be like, yes, this is, I could right. read this on its own. But I think you're getting at something where the lyric is, you know, one, doing the work of music, and mm-hmm. sometimes the necessary abstraction of a line might be a little more appropriate for the song. Right. Whereas in the poem, you know, even the poem we just heard from you, it's so intimate. The details are so specific that it seems maybe not appropriate for a song for whatever reason. So I wonder if, like, if those are in some ways, in some instances, the two minds. I guess my question about some of the intimacy of your poetry is, when you're thinking about audience, and, you know, you now have a lot of eyes and ears attuned to what you're doing, in part because of the book and the week and the album, but also in part because you have this status now as the National Youth Poet Laureate. You're sharing all of these very fine details about your life with the world, who you don't know, but also your parents. And yeah. Right. So how do you navigate being so open and intimate, and you know, what seems to be just, you know, free in what you're writing, knowing that you're going to have these eyes on what it is you're doing?
I think that's also something I'm still trying to figure out. I think it's just kind of scary. And honestly, the most scary aspect of it is my parents. Like, I think it's one thing that, like, there are some random people, like, in the Midwest or whatever, who are, like, listening to my songs or, like, reading my poems or whatever, and they could be like, oh, she's writing poems about her rigidity. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Like, okay, whatever. That's fine. Right. But it's, like, presenting it to my mom, not as, like,
right. So what do they think of the book? I mean, I know that they're very proud of you. I mean, you have very supportive parents who, mm-hmm. you know, since I've known you, have consistently shown up for you, for YCA, everybody. For Louder Than a Bomb, for other artists, right? Yeah. I mean, they are very incredible in their own right, but then also very supportive of this community. But yeah, how do they think about this book or some of those more difficult poems, I would imagine it'd be for a parent to read. Yeah,
I'm not sure if they've, well, I mean, also just because we sold all the books at my release party, they don't really, I have like my
subtle
copy.
Subtle flex. But.
So they haven't probably read all the books or all the poems in the book, but they've definitely heard some of them. I think also my mom, I think my parents are kind of like, they're very aligned and like they've been married for decades, whatever, but like they're definitely very different people. So I know just like which parent is going to be more cool with like certain things. So I always like, if I have a poem where I'm like, like I'll go to my mom first about it, because I know that she's going to be like more receptive. I think it's more concerning for me, like presenting work that's like more raunchy in front of my dad.
Yeah.
Cause he's just like
your dad.
Southern. Yeah. And he's my dad. Yeah. He's very like, he's not traditional, like he's not traditional, but he's still like Southern boy, Baptist, like whatever. I think it's easier to present work to my mom also because my mom and I are the same person, only I'm like more raunchy than she is. And I think that I'm just like who my mom would be if she just like had different parents in a lot of ways. And so I think honestly, she kind of gets like excited about the fact that I'm kind of ridiculous. I mean, sometimes she's just like, oh my God, like why? Because also just like the way that I act is so like sometimes just like drawing for her. Because my mom definitely is like, oh, why did you just do that? Or if I'm like sitting a certain way, she'd be like, can you please like sit like in a more like appropriate way or whatever. Or just like, I don't know, I just don't care about certain things. Like if I have to go to the bathroom, I'm like, I'm going to the bathroom. Like if we're outside, I'm like, look, y'all, I have to go to the bathroom. My mom's always like, oh my God, like it's like you're a man, like you just went pee in this alley. And I'm like, yeah, I just had to go pee. So there's definitely just things for them that I think they're just kind of like starting to accept about me. Or also just like my tattoos. Like I think at this point my parents just sit in my house and just like brace themselves for like whatever I'm about to do next. And I think they're just starting to kind of be, there's like just growing up and being a teenager also, like the rules change. Like now I'm just like 19. Like when I was 16 and doing stuff, like got my nose pierced when I was 16, and that was like a very big deal. And now it's like at this point, what else? My mom's like, what am I supposed to do now? Like I just can't do anything about this. So I think they're just kind of like gonna continue to be support as long as I don't do something crazy. Like,
well, you did, I mean, this, they've been very supportive and also concerned. I mean, you had you took a gap year, essentially to, you know, be the Chicago and the National Youth Poet Laureate. And they got on board with that. I don't know if from the beginning. I know they had a lot of questions, of course, at the beginning. But that seems like a really big step for them to be like, yeah, go be a poet for a year, whatever that means.
I think with my art, they're always just like very supportive of that. Or even just like I'm leaving for school in a month and my mom is like, look, like you got this little EP, like you got this book, like if you're at school and you're like, I don't want to be doing this, I'm not going to be mad at you.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's like the best part of my parents. And I definitely have been like so afraid of like the possibilities and just kind of like the lack of like certainty that's coming with it with these next few months and just like these next few years. But I just think knowing like whatever I do, like whatever decision I make about my life, like my parents like are behind me. And like even my brother, I think also just like having an older brother is really helpful, because looking at his trajectory and just like seeing what he did, like going to school or whatever, was really helpful in terms of establishing what I wanted to do. And just like, I think also, I mean, like it kind of sucks because like the older siblings often are just like the like trial runs.
Yeah. I'm an older brother, so I relate. Yeah.
So I think at this point, my parents are just kind of like, well, like, I don't really know. This, like, you can kind of do whatever you want.
Pave the way. Like, we're pioneers, man.
Yeah. You know? And so, because my brother definitely had to go through a lot. Like, my brother definitely walked so I could run. Like, that's right. True. So, yeah. I think this, I like knowing that my parents are the best in terms of just, like, supporting me no matter what and just making sure, like, I'm doing what I want to do. And also, college costs money, so it's kind of like, while my parents definitely want me to have a degree and like I want that for myself, at least right now, it's also kind of like, if I decided I want to go to school, like that saves them a lot of money and saves me a lot of money and saves everybody a lot of money. So I think that's also just kind of a thing too. It's just kind of like whatever fits, like whatever. It just seems like the best thing to do.
So you're of course on your way to Smith this fall.
Yes.
You are going with a great friend of yours.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Patricia Fraser. Right? Former youth poet laureate of Chicago and of the nation. Mm-hmm. Do you have an anticipation of what you'll study there, or do you? Mm-hmm. Is it just going to go and maybe check it out?
I think, well, right now I'm just saying my major is like English or something. I think that's kind of like standard, like I write. Right. I should probably study the English language. But I don't know. There's also no core curriculum, so I kind of, that just means like there's, you don't have to take like required like math or something, or like there's no, because a lot of schools it's just like your freshman year is like
all the basic shit you gotta get out the way,
which is just, why would I want to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to take calculus? So I really appreciate that about Smith's academics. That's one of the reasons why I picked the school, because it was like, oh, I don't have to take science, that's awesome. So I think I just have a lot of room to explore the academics there, and there's a lot of cool professors, like a lot of poets come in and out of Smith. And Northampton is like a very tiny place, but it's kind of bussing. Also, like, there are a lot of people coming in and out of Northampton, which is very surprising to me. But there's like a music scene there. There's like this music venue, like the Iron Horse or something, that a lot of my favorite artists are coming to this year. So it definitely just, there's a lot of possibilities. So I guess like right now my major is English, but could be something else. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for you. I mean, and I think you'll do great wherever you go. But I'm certainly excited for you to, you know, kind of branch out and explore that scene and that community and have that, you know, more rigorous academic life. I guess just before we wrap up, I want to know about what this year has been like for you as Chicago Youth Poet Laureate and the National Youth Poet Laureate. What do those things mean, and what are some of the things? I know you obviously wrote the book this year, but what are some of the things that you've done and experienced in the year because of these titles?
Yeah, it feels like a lot. but this year is really rewarding in a lot of ways. It was really challenging in a lot of ways, just because I've never been like so in control over my schedule, just like being in school for so many years. Like, you just kind of know you're supposed to wake up at like 7, go to school, do all this stuff or whatever. So once it was like, I was basically doing freelance work for like a whole year, and that was kind of like just a major shift. But it was really rewarding because I got to just do really cool things. Like, I did a TEDx talk in December, and I was working on this book. Sunday I got to open for Kaina at her headlining show and album release party at Lincoln Hall. Got to do a show with Jamila Woods celebrating Heaven. And just like crazy stuff. I just feel like this year has been crazy in a lot of ways. Like, I just don't even remember. Like, people will just bring up stuff and I'll be like, oh yeah, like I guess I did that. I don't even really remember at this point. Like, people will be like, oh, I watched your TED talk. Like, I really just like, when I tell you, I just kind of forgot about that. Like, I just kind of did because there's just so much. But it feels just like wild, I guess, because even though this year was filled with so many rewarding things and just so much, I just still feel like the same also in a lot of ways. Like, I just feel like I'm the same person. I'm definitely not. I've definitely had a lot of personal growth this year, and just like in terms of just like my artistry and my discipline. And also just like who I am as a person, and like how I want to engage with people, like whatever.
How has that changed your artistry and your discipline? How has that changed for you this year?
I think I'm just like, I understand now that I just like have to put in that work. I think before it was kind of like, I don't know, I can write a poem like here and there, whatever, or I can like read a book like here and there, whatever. And then it just became like, I have to be really honest with myself, like my best work is not going to happen if I don't have some type of schedule, or if I don't just force myself to be rigorous and dedicate my life to this, especially with music. Cause I think I've just been listening to music for my entire life, and like, I know I'm doing that work. I think it's way easier for me to like consume music and like make music from that, than like sitting down and reading like a whole book. But I think I also just like practice so much now. Like I have to practice my songs like so much, or just preparing for the show on Sunday. Like I was so scared. Like I had to practice like so much. And I think before I was like, oh, I make music, whatever. And I would like go to like perform my songs, and I was like not ready to be performing those songs. I didn't put in the work. Like my calluses weren't developed, like whatever. And so I think it's just kind of like a matter of like understanding, like if I want to be perceived and like if I'm being looked at and I'm more visible now, like I gotta be on point. And that's just like,
well, you've also you've gotten to see some very powerful, very talented women work in that way too this year, right? Mm-hmm. You've gotten to work, and as you've been with Jamila, but also Kaina, Tasha, mm-hmm. others, you know, you've gotten
Pat, even like right. just like people and like Pat and Iman, also just like the previous Youth Poet Laureates, watching them, especially now that my book is out, just watching them like hustle and like how they market their book and just like how they navigate through those spaces has been like super informative. And also I forgot, like we went to London last month, and
right
that was really informative also, just in terms of like
four
like,
poems, right?
Yeah, I mean that, yeah, just for poetry. And that was just so weird because I've never had to like go somewhere like on a work trip, really. Like I don't really do that, and so we were kind of pressed because I was like, look, I want to go to the club.
relax, do me a favor.
But like that was definitely like also a cool experience, because now it's just kind of like, this is so beyond me, and this is like in a different country, and I'm like way more responsible than I maybe want to be or thought that I was, like over my work and just like for myself. But yeah, I like grew up a lot this year because of that, and like because I had to like navigate through those things. And those people, like Kaina definitely is totally responsible for like most of the stuff we talked about on this podcast, like my EP and just like getting it distributed and just like understanding. There's so much about like the music industry that I just didn't understand, and I would not understand if it wasn't for Tasha and Jamila and Kaina and Sen also, and like Namdi and all these people, like because I didn't know what I was doing at all. So watching them, because they totally were in a position that was similar at one point, like Kaina definitely was also, and she's still figuring that out. And so it was also kind of cool to like understand like all these people who I thought were like totally had everything together, like, or like totally just knew everything, like didn't like know everything, and we're also still trying to figure it out. So like, it was kind of good that we're like semi in the same boat, even though like Tasha or like Kaina are like kind of in some bigger boats, but like I'm in like my baby boat behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, I think that's the power of community and a testament to where you're at too. People are, you know, they see the work you're doing, and they know the importance of it, and also know the promise of it too. So I think one of all of our hopes is that, you know, when you go to Smith in the fall, you'll continue that same rigor and invest the time in yourself to give yourself that continued space and permission to create and never, ever, ever, ever stop.
Well, we will see.
No, we will. We will ensure it. I know it's going to happen. So where can people find all these projects?
So, well, you can, I'm on social media, Twitter, Instagram.
And what is it? Yeah.
Frida Halo, F-R-I-D-A. It's Frida, like, people always ask me how to spell it. I'm just like, have you never heard, whatever. But Frida, F-R-I-D-A-H-A-L-O. And the music is on SoundCloud and stuff, and Apple Music, Spotify, Bandcamp. The book, Haymarket's website, but honestly, please buy the book from me.
do you have shows coming up that people can see you at?
Yeah, I'm performing at Ace Hotel on tomorrow.
Right, so this will air after that, but yeah.
But also, I have a So Far Sound show on July 31st, Pitchfork on Sunday. I'm reading at the Oak Park Public Library on August 14th, maybe.
Great.
Yeah, I don't know. There will probably be other things.
More gigs to come, sure.
Hopefully, I'm trying to get some money. So if you need to book me, please.
Right, for real. Yeah, no, reach out. Well, Kara, you know, I'm so excited for the week you've had and the projects you've shared with the world and everything that's to come. Thank you so much for being in the Corner Store.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We want to thank our super producer, DJ Cashera,
WDN boss man, Todd Manley.
Shout out Ernie the engineer.
And of course, Max the snack tour.
All day. On IG and Twitter, we are
Cornerstore_pod.
Please, y'all, rate and subscribe on iTunes. Tell someone to listen to the Corner Store. And if you wish, you could also tell us who we should have on the Corner Store.
Yeah, just, you know, slide in our DMs.
They're open.
A great way to support us is through our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod. And you can, you know, support us in our future endeavors and, you know, get some benefits along the way. And
it's like the little change jar, like,
yeah,
you know, in front,
little,
like at the corner store.
Jar, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Right, right. Yeah, yeah. If you listen, please support, and we really appreciate your support.
Thanks.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.